You're listening to Living Lab Radio. I'm Heather Goldstone. We turn our attention now to some distinctly lighter fare, fish sounds, like this one. Yes, that's a fish, not a woodpecker. As odd as they may be, the sounds fish make can actually be an important tool for scientists attempting to track and manage fish populations. Underwater microphones can identify the presence of invasive species or reveal when and where fish are mating. Rodney Roundtree is an independent marine ecologist whose 25-year career has spanned many research and education institutions, most recently UMass Amherst and the University of Victoria. He's a member of the board of directors for the River Project, a nonprofit environmental group focused on the Hudson River, and he's spent a lot of time in the past several years listening to fish. Rodney, welcome to the show.
Well, good to be here.
I'm going to attempt to ask the least ignorant version of this question. I know some fish make sounds. Obviously, we're about to hear them. Do all fish make sounds?
No, many fish don't make sounds. However, most fish make what we call incidental sounds. So they can make sounds as a byproduct of whatever behavior, like feeding.
And so they're like smacking their lips.
Or biting a hard substrate or swimming motions. But that can also be important to us because if those sounds are unique to the fish in a situation, then we can still use that to identify the fish.
All right, let's hear a few of these sounds to get us started. It's kind of like a game of name that fish for you. We're going to start off with one we call the jump. Okay, so it starts off with a splash. I mean, that sounds like what you were saying, that incidental noise.
That is a jump. That initial sound is a sound of what we believe is Atlantic salmon jumping, which I recorded in the Penobscot River in Maine.
But then there's kind of a weird, almost like trilling sound after that.
What happens, many more primitive fish have a gas bladder that is connected to their gut. And to fill the gas bladder, they have to gulp air at the surface. Many fish actually breathe air that way. So fish like the salmon, they come up to the surface, gulp air. And then at some point, they can expel that air in a fart or a burp or cough to produce a sound. And so this is the first recording of Atlantic salmon. And one of the really interesting sounds there is that woo sound at the end, which is very unusual for a fish.
Do we know how it makes that unusual sound?
Well, I just published a paper describing it. I don't know exactly how they make the sound, but it's probably what we're calling air movement sounds. So it's the movement of air within the fish's body as the air bolus moves from the air bladder, or swim bladder, to the gut or is vented. So that makes a sound.
That's an unusual sounding burp.
Yes.
They don't usually make a woohoo sound. All right, let's hear our next one. I mean, there's no splashing associated with that, so I'm assuming that's not just like a fin or a tail slapping on water. What makes that kind of snapping or slapping sound?
I have no idea. That's a sound that Atlantic sturgeon are making, and I recorded that in the Kennebec River in Maine. And at first you might think it might be a slapping sound, the fish is slapping on the substrate or something, but sturgeon have these large bony scutes, and you would expect to have not hear just such a clean snap. Some other colleagues have recorded similar sounds in the South. Right now, this is unpublished work. We're still working on trying to identify that. But it's pretty clear that it's Atlantic salmon, maybe short-nosed sturgeon. I'm sorry, Atlantic sturgeon. Maybe a short-nosed sturgeon also. But it's a very loud sound that you hear from quite a ways away.
All right, last one. All right, so that one's pretty subtle. You get a lot of water noise there, and then like these little almost buzzing sounds.
Yes, that's another example of air movement sounds that we've just published. That's from the white sucker, and that was recorded in the Stony Brook herring run here on Cape Cod. And what the fish is doing, again, it comes to the surface, gulps air, and then as it moves back down to the bottom, then produces a series of these sounds, which at the, right now we don't know what the purpose of that is, if it's just incidental or if it's used in communication. This is the first time they've been recorded. The only other fish in this group of fish, of the suckers, that's ever been recorded to make sounds was a chub by a man named Abbott in the 1800s. And he described a very similar type of sound, but it's very new.
I'm talking with marine ecologist Rodney Roundtree about fish sounds. I want to go back to one that we played right at the top that sounded like a woodpecker. You already mentioned the idea that there are some sounds that we have no idea even how they're making them. And there are other sounds that we think we know exactly what they're doing when they make those sounds. This one, I think, falls into that latter category. So what's going on with that woodpecker-like sound?
Yes, this is the sound of a striped cuscule that this particular example I recorded on the Cape some years ago. The striped cuscule is a small cryptic fish that is buried under the sand during the day. It comes out at sunset. And as it comes out, the males make this sound. It's an advertisement sound. They're basically like frogs are calling for to attract a female.
Or like bird songs.
Yeah. Yes, similar. And this fish has special muscles associated with its swim bladder or gas bladder that rock and push on the swim bladder to make these. It's a type of drumming sound, but it's a very fast, very high frequency sound. I've gotten a lot of mileage out of this fish sound because I actually did a little side project for my dissertation when I was working at Rutgers University in New Jersey many years ago. A friend of mine knew that these cuscules made sound. She had heard them in the laboratory, and I happened to catch some of them. And we decided to try to get them to spawn in the laboratory, so we kept about half a dozen individuals in the laboratory, and they spawned every night for us. And the males, like clockwork, you can almost set your watch to when they would start calling right at sunset. And when I came up here to the Cape years later, I got interested in doing fish sound work more directly. And I was going all the way back down to New Jersey to record these really interesting fish that no one had ever recorded before. And at some point, after months of doing that, I discovered that the fish sound is right here on Cape Cod. In fact, it's all over the place on Cape Cod.
Really?
But no one knew that the fish was here.
So you found the fish by its sound, yes. Not by actually seeing it.
Yeah, and eventually once I, with the sound, I was actually able to capture some of them.
Well, and to that point, you've recently raised the idea that monitoring sounds underwater could be one way actually to find and track invasive species.
Yes, we did a study just published last year, Dr. Francis Juanes from University of Victoria, myself. We had a undergraduate student years ago do a little Hudson River Polgar Fellowship project in the Hudson River. And she went and recorded sounds in New York City and about 100 miles up the river. And we had lots of unidentified sounds. We didn't know what most of the things were except for the cuscule and toadfish.
That cuscule is everywhere.
Yeah, it's actually quite common. But I presented some of these sounds at a conference down in Florida, and one of my colleagues who's an expert in drum sounds said, you know, that sounds like a drum.
Well, actually, let's hear the drum. Right, that's not exactly the sound that comes to mind for me when I think of a drum, but that's, I guess, a pretty distinctive.
Yes, when I first heard that in the Erie Canal, I thought of it as a monster fish. It's very loud. And what you're hearing there is actually a chorus. That's around sunset, the males start chorusing, again, similar to frogs and birds, to try to attract females for spawning. And so that's a number of individuals all calling back and forth. And you can hear the different individuals, different qualities to their sounds.
You know, it's funny. Maybe it's just me, but I mean, I even come from a marine biology background. And I have this bias where I don't think of fish as being this vocal, social, complex behavior kind of animal. You know, we ascribe that to birds or to mammals, but clearly fish have the same thing going on.
It's a phenomenon out of sight, out of mind. And even many fish scientists just, they were aware that fish make sounds, but they don't quite realize the importance of that. And there have been so many studies where people would be studying the behavior, courtship behavior of a fish. It's very vocal, but they don't think to put a hydrophone in the water to listen to the sounds and how the sounds are important. 95% of the problem or the difficulty that scientists have in working with fish is understanding where they are.
Right.
Where they're located.
I've had somebody say to me that, you know, trying to count fish, essentially do fish stock assessments, you know, is kind of like counting trees, except that they're constantly moving and you can't see them because they're underwater. Right. Does listening to them make more sense in an aquatic environment than trying to look for them?
In some cases it does, because you're working in a very opaque environment. Or at depth, I've recorded fish sounds off the slope, continental slope here off of George's Bank. And one problem is, if you want to try to visualize a fish to count it with other technology like video or something, you have to have lights. So now you're changing the behavior of the fish. It takes a lot of power. But just finding the fish, and especially if you know that like that freshwater drum, that's a courtship sound. Just by hearing that sound, you know, oh, the fish is spawning at this time in this location. That is something that's very difficult to determine by conventional methods. You basically have to catch a lot of fish, kill them, look at their gonads, and assess whether they're ready to spawn or not. Very, very difficult. Passive acoustics does not replace those types of methodologies, but it's another tool in the toolbox, is what I like to say, that you can use to help you understand the fish ecology.
Rodney Rountree is an independent marine ecologist and a member of the board of directors of the River Project, a nonprofit group focused on the Hudson River. Rodney, thanks for coming in to talk with us.
Appreciate it. My pleasure.
And that's our show. Until next week, I'm Heather Goldstone. Thanks for listening.
Living Lab Radio is produced by WCAI in Woods Hole and WGBH Radio in Boston. It's produced by me, Elsa Partan, and Heather Goldstone is executive producer. Funding for Living Lab Radio comes from the Candida Fund, investing in transformative leaders and ideas. Theme music by Stellwagen Symphonette.